I have not given up the finger guns thing, apparently. I just found that out. Thought I was done with that. Apparently not. How are you, Sophia?
I'm good. How are you, Rob?
I am wonderful. I am so excited to talk to you today. As always, we'll do the housekeeping. Context, don't know you at all.
Yo.
So excited to get to know you. So I don't know anything about where this is going or what we're about to talk about other than high school and college dance. So that's our kind of context for why you were there. And then when you were there, you said 2016 was high school?
Yeah.
And then college was 19?
2019. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So let's just go to the beginning. The only question I have, you know what it is? You've heard the show before, apparently. We want to thank Sophia, everybody, for listening to the show. She's one of the 12 of you, so enjoy it. You're among friends just listening to a listener. But let's start with the only question I have, which is, where are you from?
I'm from Brazil.
Brazil? Which part of Brazil? Yes.
Belo Horizonte is the capital
of my state. My favorite part.
I know.
Yeah. I was going to say.
I feel like when people ask me that, if it's not Rio, they're like, okay. But they're hoping it is Rio. You know, it's like, that's like the hope.
But you know what the thing is, too? Is like I always ask people that, especially if I have no context of what they're about to say other than maybe one city, like you just said. And I think it's because it is a sincere question. It's a silly question at first because I know you're going to say some shit I don't know. But it's a sincere question because I want to know what that means in the context of being from that place. So like, are we talking a rural place? Is it a city? Is it a town?
It's a city. It's very much so a city. It's the capital of my state, which is Minas Gerais. And my state shares border both through Rio and São Paulo. And it's like a part of the three most populous states. It's definitely like double the size of Rio and São Paulo, like in land. Like the way that we kind of say like São Paulo is like a business town, like maybe. And then Rio like has business, but it's also a very tourist town, very like beach and whatever. And then Belo Horizonte, it's like all the, I'm already losing my English words. All the factories, all the land, all the farms, but the capital,
the country.
Very much so. Like, yeah.
Got it.
But very much so a big city. Like, grew up in apartments. You needed a car to get places.
Is there a city that you've been in the States that kind of feels ish, like remotely close, so that if like an American was listening to this and they were like, oh, it's kind of like this town?
Interesting. Not quite.
Right.
Because the translation of the name of the city is Beautiful Horizon. So we are like right in the middle of a bunch of mountains. So
while
we are very much so like a city, like full of apartments everywhere you look.
Yeah.
Lots of hills. So maybe San Francisco in that way. Like, can't really say that
you've been to
walk
Denver
somewhere. I have not.
I think you might like the vibe of Denver. Yeah. First of all, I'll just be fully transparent. I'm just a big Colorado fan. I'm not from there. I'm from Texas, but I'm a big fan of Colorado. I got married there. I just really like the state. But as you describe, like an actual, you know, a full thriving city, but also Colorado is largely country. Like it has cities, but it's got big, huge, wide open spaces. And of course, the entire country of Brazil is loaded with rainforests and jungles and all sorts of, I mean, it's a lot of stuff. It kind of reminds me of when I've talked to people from it, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Australia in that way.
Is it?
It's such a massive place, but most of it doesn't have civilized society living in it day to day.
Yeah, totally.
So when then does the dancing start? I usually hear it in the single digit ages.
You're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello.
I was.
Are you one of the people who's like, I was two? Yeah, I was going to say.
What does that mean?
A class, right?
A class. But it was actually really funny because I listened to the episode you did with Cece, who said, I feel like when you're young, you're not really dancing. You're not really taking a class.
I remember
very much
that.
So agree. Like, yes. But I was, you know, there's like videos of me in dance class and all of that. Like before first grade, you know, it's like,
if
you're
you
really
were
just
in martial arts and you took Taekwondo when you were four, we would still say that's when you started your martial arts journey. There'd be no debate about that.
Yeah, very true. So three. And then I did, like, you know, like, pre-primary, primary, like, dance class and whatever. And then you had to switch schools to go to first grade. And my dance teacher was like, she has potential. She should go to, like, an actual, like, dance school.
Right.
And in my town, we have a place called CEFAH. It's, like, Center for Education, Arts, something, something, something.
Got it.
And it's, like, a conservatory without the academics, but a conservatory for arts.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to audition in, and you have, like, so it starts at 8th grade, 8 years old until 18 for dance. And you have to audition in, you have exams to pass each year, like, you have grades. It's very much so, like, a school for dance.
Right.
And then they have, like, music and drama as well. So I was too young when she said that, but I went to first grade. I didn't take dance classes that year because we were waiting for me to audition for that school. And then I got in and I was there until I moved to the United States.
Let's talk about the fam a little bit. So, like, what's the unit like? Parents, siblings, what do you got going on?
Parents, they got divorced when I was a year old or about. I don't remember, but, like, about that young.
Before you, you don't remember them being together.
I don't remember them being together. Right. Not at all. But they are friends. Like,
great.
We vacation together.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, like.
That's a blessing, I gotta say.
It really is. I'm very lucky, and I recognize that. No, to the point that, like, I'm moving to the United States for 8 years now, and there's times that my dad comes over to my mom's house to have dinner with my uncle on my mom's side of the family. It's just, like, very much so we're all in this together, which is very
great. Well, I think it says a lot about the family unit that you're from. I mean, I don't think you can draw, like, all the conclusions from that one thing, but I will say, as you know, I have a similar experience. I do remember my parents being together. They didn't split till I was, like, 6 or 7, but I was still really young. But they were, like, high school sweethearts who, like, split up for their 20s and then got back together in their late 20s and had me.
That's
kind of weird. You don't hear a lot of that story.
No.
But that kind of, when they ended up splitting, and which was a permanent split when I was a kid, they it was hard to avoid the history, you know? And they had a kid together, so there was... They were never going to, like, hate each other. It just wasn't in the cards because they just known each other for so long. There was a lot of times when they were just friends and that was their dynamic. So
yeah,
I think it takes really mature people to continue to have relationships after romance that are friendly. And if you have a kid in the mix and you're trying to balance whose house are they at? Who's paying for what? I mean, it's a complex thing a lot of people, married parents, don't get. It's a specific experience. But did you have step parents?
Oh, yes. My dad my dad has been married 6 times.
Hell yeah. So, how do you feel about that?
It's a journey, you know?
Okay.
It sure is. Like, yeah, I remember being very young and I had a little notebook that I kept track of, like, my dad has been, like, married this many times, had this many girlfriends, X amount of girlfriends, had kids, like...
Who in the six is mom? Your mom.
What?
First. So you've had five different stepmoms.
Yeah.
Do you have one right now?
I do not, actually. Okay. I don't.
Okay.
But, like, five that he got married with, right? Like, we're not counting the long-term girlfriends.
Right, of course. Or the girlfriends then. I had a stepmom that was never legally my stepmom. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. You get tons of those. So he's been married several times.
Living his life, dad is. Can we
definitely
say?
Definitely. Very,
he's not,
like,
limited
hopefully
in his experience. No. Unfair for him to be on his deathbed being like, I didn't get out there. I never really.
No, and he definitely will not be able to say that.
Okay.
So he got married several times after, not currently married. But I have two sisters from different marriages with my dad's side of the family.
Are you tight with them,
sister,
like, in the way that everybody's cool?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I feel like in that way, I gotta say, like, my dad managed all of that really well in kind of saying, you know, like, they're siblings and we want them to, like, vacation together and all that, and we all need to coordinate this for it to be, like,
if you don't mind, just because I'm very curious about this, and I mean, my my mom was married 4 times. She's not currently married. My dad was married twice. So I'm definitely like, I'm not quite in the 6 times ballpark. That's impressive. But I have not talked to someone who kind of has my numbers beat. So I have a few questions for you, if you don't mind.
Go for it. No, no, no.
How does the transition go? We haven't even talked about your mom, but how does the transition go on that side in those conversations? Obviously, these relationships are lasting different lengths. Sometimes maybe it's much shorter. Maybe it was years and years for some. My mom's 4th marriage lasted 20 years. Like it was, you know, it wasn't like everyone was like 18 months, like a celebrity thing. It was like some of them really lasted. She was married to my dad for almost a decade. So like, it, all sorts of different dynamics. I'm sure that's a little bit of what's going on in your world too. But when you're a kid growing up, I remember the very few conversations that my parents had to have with me of like, so here's the deal. This is going to be your new parent and we're going to make it official. And they're not just a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever it is. How is that going for you? And at what point are you like, oh, did this one not work out? Wow, that's crazy. Oh, there's another one. Well, I never saw it coming. Wow.
Wow. Yeah. It's funny because like a lot of them happened before I was 10.
Wow.
So.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So like very few memories of like those conversations.
It's a wash.
Yeah. You know, and when he married the one on my younger sister's mom and I was like 10 or 11 or so. They stayed married for like 7 years, which is the longest any of his marriages has lasted. Like her and my mom have like the highest 7, I think it like difference by a couple months.
Got it.
So I don't really remember. It was kind of like, it just kind of happened. And if there was a conversation, and just weren't there. My dad is someone that gets married really fast.
Right. Okay.
Like I mean, a lot of his, a lot of his like relationships end up getting engaged or moving to the next like within 6 months or a year or so. Because he's very much so romantic. He's very much so big.
Did that feel like a common thing amongst other like friends and stuff growing up? Did your dad feel like other people's dads were doing this? Or are you like, man, my dad's got a special kind of thing going on, kind of a hopeless
my
romantic.
Dad,
he just wants to make it work.
I think I said this to him, so it's fine. But my mom and I started having this joke that he was in his, I'm going to say it in Portuguese because I actually don't think I know it in English, but fase de acasalamento, which means that like when the birds are like looking for a companion and they like puff up and all of
Got it.
So we
almost
would,
like when a dog's in heat, it's like a mating time.
Exactly, mating time. Because my dad's mood would change and things that he would do would change. So we would be like,
wow,
this is the time.
The season.
We would So,
wow,
that became a joke.
I don't normally go off quite on such a tangent on someone's folks, but like I just really appreciate what I had a little bit. So thank you for humoring me with that. That's very interesting to me. So what about mom? Did mom like? Do you have stepdads and stuff like that? Or
I had long-term boyfriends, like boyfriends that stayed around for like a really long time. Even one that we like lived with, but never like official like marriage.
It seems like you have and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but just kind of picking up your tone, it seems like you have a pretty good relationship with all these different people. I'm not hearing you be like, and then it was like a nightmare and they lived here, terrible stepmom or something. Like, pretty chill. Like, sounds like everybody's kind of pretty nice to each other. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's like, you know, drama within some
it's
of the stepmoms.
Right. Yeah.
But it's also like, especially living in the States now and being kind of like far away from that. It's kind of like, why make it harder than it needs to be kind of thing, you know? Like,
right.
I'm not there. And like, even currently with my dad and his girlfriend, and something I say all the time is that like, I don't really care who he's with as long as they treat my sisters well, because they're the ones experiencing it all the time.
Right.
So like, as long as like that relationship is fine, like, you know, whatever. Like the last wife he had was lovely. I didn't really get too much along with her daughter. But nothing major. And I also only saw her for like 2 weeks because I was already living here. So it was like, oh, we're getting married. Oh, I'm there for summer kind of thing. Like,
at this point, if it keeps up, they're going to come and go while you're gone.
Exactly. I mean, oh my God, this happened recently. Last summer, I had a friend from Brazil visiting.
Yeah.
And my dad knew she was visiting, and he was with a girlfriend at the time and asked this really good friend of mine to mail me a book. Not mail me, like bring in her suitcase a book that his girlfriend was giving me. And it's a thick book. I'm going to get it. Just have an idea.
Yeah, please do.
It's like...
That's a big book. That's like a coffee table.
Table recipes from my state, like heavy, you know? This huge grand gesture that my friend now is going to like bring you her suitcase and whatever. So she brings the book. And the girlfriend at the time was Junia. Like that was the name. So he FaceTimed us while I was here with my, it's a beautiful Brazilian name. He FaceTimed us when we were here hanging out, and I was like in a shopping mall with her, or like I was in the store, you know, and my dad is in at a restaurant with her and my sisters, and he's like, I just want you to be here when like the first official like lunch of the fit kind of like made it official in that way. And I was like at a escalator being like, okay, like,
right, I'm happy I can be here for you.
Great, cool. Hung up the phone, like, what is this?
You know? Right, right, right.
And then, like, the following week or so, like, next time I talk to him on the phone, I'm like, oh, and how is Junia? And he's like, who's Junia? Like, not who's Junia, but basically, like, he had moved on already. And I was like, we just did this whole big thing where she mailed me a book. Like, this just happened.
Man, yeah. So it sounds a little goldfish memory to me. It sounds a little bit like, right. Oh, my God, I left her at the bus station, and now... Oh man, I got distracted. That's funny.
That
gives me some context. So what brings you then to the States for school? Why that?
Dance.
She was short. But you could dance in lots of places. You could have gone to Moscow.
That's very true. I went to that school that's like a conservatory dance school and started taking dance very seriously. And we started going to like dance competitions around Brazil and was doing really well and winning prizes and starting with other like Brazilian dance companies and all the stuff. And so I had a teacher who basically was like, told my parents, like, if Sophia really wants to do this, she should start doing summer intensives outside of Brazil to like get the experience.
Broaden, diversify.
Exactly. Yeah, and I was lucky that my parents, like, were able to support that and had the means to help me make that happen. But basically, like, a lot of dancers in Brazil are just, like, rehearsing every day and practicing every day like everyone else, but really just hoping for that one experience and that one opportunity to go to a dance competition and get a scholarship. So it's,
it feels like everybody's trying to get out.
Everyone's trying to get out, but, like, there's maybe, like, 5 people that get out per year because that's their scholarships. So...
That's arts, right?
Exactly. And at that point, I was already taking English, like, after school, because my parents always thought that was important. So the teacher was like, she has the language. She, you know, you guys don't have to be waiting for a scholarship, but you can go on these schools and their websites and do it the other way, which chances are much higher, kind of thing.
Right.
So when I was 14, I started coming here for summer intensives. And my first summer intensive was at UNCSA.
Oh, okay.
Not the UNCSA summer intensive, but American Ballet Theater here in New York.
Okay.
Does
collab.
And they do one. They collab. Got it. And they host one there because they go to a lot of different states. And when I applied, my first one, we kind of went through the big names because that's what we knew in Brazil. Yeah. Like, that's what got there. And I applied and I got into the one in New York, but they didn't offer any housing. You kind of have to find your own. And I was like 14. And my parents were like, we can't really just send you alone to New York, like, for your first time in the city, like, kind of just be, you know?
Yeah.
So too then young. We looked too young. It was a little bit too soon.
You need a dorm. So you need an RA. You need some structure. Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah. Especially like... as an immigrant, right? Like, it's like, I don't even know the ways around or what to do or who to call.
Of things. You might fuck something up and have no idea and it's not your fault.
Exactly. Yeah. So then the UNCSA was like, they had housing. So I went there for the summer.
There you go. They kind of got you with the sleepaway camp.
They did, which I feel like they get a lot of us through this that summer camp.
They do, for sure. Well, not just the sleepaway camp in the summer, but I mean, even the notion that you can house there in high school. I mean, there's limited places even yeah. in the States for that. I didn't know, and I've talked about this on the show before many times, I didn't know that existed. I grew up in a place where, like, the only choices you had were you could go to public school and just deal with whatever your public school district had to offer, which might have had little arts money and maybe they had a little nice program or something, but nothing like do art all day and go sleep there or some crazy shit. That's college is what you're talking yeah. about. Unless, and then you could go to private school and it would be like Catholic. Either yeah, Catholic or Baptist, and then other than that, it was like yeah, and you had to take scripture classes and stuff and all that. Other than that, those are your choices. And then yeah. later, I heard stories, which is so crazy to me. Growing up in Texas, which is a state that has a lot of money, and does okay in education, but then I go to North Carolina and I hear about like, oh yeah, or Duke Ellington School of the Arts, or I hear about all these different high schools that are all arts based. In states that famously are like 48th in education. And I'm like, what the fuck are we? This is misaligned.
What happened?
I get that they're in New York City, like, you know, LaGuardia and stuff like that. That made sense to me. And I found out yeah. about that when I was like a sophomore in high school. And mm-hmm. I ended up going to one of those schools for a year. That's we mentioned before we started that I lived in New York.
Yeah.
But it is a very specific thing to start getting a focused education at that age. Yeah. As opposed, not like after school, like
yeah.
instead of school,
yeah.
like to what everyone else is doing for, you know, 8 hours, 10 hours a day. You're not doing that. You're doing this other thing that has a little bit of that, but mostly it's this other thing. And I think finding that's special in general, because it just isn't around. And a lot of people just don't even know it's an option.
No, and I feel like also by putting it in like, high school grades and like making it a priority for some students, it also shows that this is a career path. Like this is
real.
As serious as math and English and everything else, you know?
Right.
It's not something extra that you're doing to entertain yourself or to keep busy, you know?
It seems like your family understood that from the beginning.
Yeah, I really loved them and they really were supportive of whatever I wanted to do. And we're trying to do anything possible to like make it happen for me. And also, but at the same time, like respected my wishes, right? Like when I was 14, 15, I went through the phase of like, I'm rehearsing too much and I'm not hanging out with my like age
right.
match peers. You know, everyone's starting to go to the mall after school and I can't because I have class or I have rehearsals on the weekend. So I
right.
went through a little like time that I was like, I don't want to dance anymore. And they were like, okay, like if you don't want to, that's fine. But I told them that over the summer, and I had gone into Juilliard summer intensive for that summer. So they were like, okay, but like we already paid, like everything's already set. So you're gonna go, and when you come back, if you still want to stop, that's it. But like this is we planned for this, you know.
That's a great fucking deal, dude.
I know. So
that's
like,
a great
cool.
It's like, hey, the check's in the mail. So too late, kid.
Yeah.
But sure. You want to talk about it after you go do this thing we just talked about this money for? Yeah, 100%.
And then I
think that's
back,
a fair
like,
deal. Again,
it was
sound
a fair
like
deal.
Very grounded, mature people.
Yeah.
Which seems to have rubbed off on you. Do you feel like when you got to Winston-Salem, North Carolina from fucking Brazil, that was like a fun, cool thing? Or were you like, this is boring as shit? Or like, how did you feel? Because it's usually one or the other. When I hear these stories, it's usually like, I was in sleepaway high school or even I was going to college and it was like, whoa, this is cool. Or Winston-Salem, I'm from New York City. I'm from fucking San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from LA. Like, this place is so boring. Like, there's nothing to do here. Which one of those did it feel like to you?
It was a mix, I will have to say. Because
sure.
I did move, like, before Winston-Salem, I was at an international high school in Brazil where the entire high school was 50 kids. So from ninth grade, we were hanging out with the seniors and going to parties and doing
things,
like, all together. But coming to Winston-Salem, it was like, I'm really loving the art and everything that I'm getting in. But I came just from my senior year. So it was a little bit of, like, this is a little slow. Like, this is...
Yeah.
What is there to do? And I also felt like in my international high school, because we were so small, everyone did everything. So like the nerd kids playing the soccer team, and like
mm-hmm.
even with me having like a really busy dance rehearsal schedule after, I was still able to be to do like MUN and do like NHS, and I was student body president, and like I was very involved.
You got to be in high school.
Exactly. And when I got to NCSA senior year, it felt like all the clubs were already taken by people that were there before, and I didn't really have a chance to join anything, so it felt a little like but I kept thinking like I'm
detached,
here because of the
but
dance
still, right? Of course. Did you feel like the culture, and I'm very interested in this about the high school dance program in particular, did you feel like the culture, as far as the other kids and maybe the teachers, but I'm really talking about just how the other, you and your peers felt while you were there, did it feel like there was a pressure for you guys to like be more adult than you were ready to be, or like grow up faster than you needed to be? Because as you know, if someone who's listened to the show before, something we talk about on the show a lot is the intensity of the conservatory training and how that affects being a young person, because it's not the same thing as like almost all other kids are like checking out mentally by like 5 p.m. They've done their homework, they've gone to school, whatever, maybe they have an activity. And, you know, we're staying up till midnight to try to turn in our academic work because we did 12 hours on arts or whatever.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a lot of pressure for anybody. But did you guys get the sense of like, damn it, let us be kids? Or did it feel like you were excited to be treated like adults?
It's interesting. I think there was definitely a little bit of a push to be like adult-like, but I think most people enjoyed it. It was a little bit of like, adult freedom. It's like,
a challenge.
A challenge. It's like, oh, I don't have my parents supervising me all the time. Like, I am making my own choices, right? Like, when we go to the mall, I don't have, like, I don't need really permission for these things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really nice. And I do think, like, for the most part, the high school, like, housing department really tries to maintain a certain level of, like, you're still in high school. So still doing like
curfews
activities and
right, that
exactly
too.
Like curfews and with some certain freedom, you know, so it's
right,
like
right.
still giving you some, but it did allow for like more things to happen than normal when, you know, like when you put a bunch of teenagers like in housing together away from parents, it's like no matter how many rules you have, like people are going to find their ways to get away from it, you know, like.
Especially when they're smart, creative, ambitious, hardworking, capable, don't give up.
Exactly.
Kids.
Yeah.
It's not just lackadaisical kids.
No.
And I think there's always going to be a little bit of like fucking kids are going to be kids, right? You can't stop kids from being kids. This is how it works.
No.
But I'm just digging into these themes more and more because I feel like the more I talk to people, the more I kind of have this theory that it's a lot when you're really young. Just the whole dynamic, whether in high school or whether you're in college. And I'm also separating intentionally kind of the content, bless you, the content aside from what we're talking about. I'm not talking about anything being asked of you by the faculty even. I'm just talking about the concept of doing this work at this volume that's this focused when you're this young of a person and being like, all this shit's due after a 12-hour day, the shit I was just talking about, just the volume of work and the intensity of the work as far as like really striving for perfection. You're not in a regular high school or even a liberal arts college. I feel like the goal is exposure more than building craft or trying to get good or great at something. It's more about like, hey, look at all this shit and here's the basics of it. See what you like, try it on, whatever. You and I have spent most of our lives being like, yeah, I don't want to try on stuff. From like early double digit age, we're like, I want to do this. This is the thing I want to, and I will give you all my time. I will give you all my love and energy, but this is the focus thing I want to do. And my question that I'm trying to just dig deep into is how does that affect you at different ages? And are you ready for certain things? Okay. And then I also think that we end up in this world sometimes where, because it's such a grown-up kind of thing to do, that line gets blurred a lot in all sorts of weird different ways. Like you said, the housing department seemed to have a good hold on it because they're like, you can, but you can't. And we got your safety and your parents are going to call us if we let you. So no, but also this is okay. Like, they got the balance of it. But I'm curious, because I wasn't in the dance school at all. I know we don't talk about the school that much, but you have that, you know, things that I don't know that I want to know. Was the content of your arts classes mature in nature as far as like what they expected from you emotionally, or the themes of things you were talking about? Would you have experienced those same, that same kind of content in Brazil? I was just, that's kind of some loose themes. You can start where you'd like.
No, I think it's a very interesting thing to like reflect on and talk about, because most of us is like, I do this after school and I do it and I really want to keep pursuing this. Oh, there's a conservatory, I can do this all the time. Great. And then you go and do it. And then there's definitely people who are like, this was way too much. And after UNCSA high school, don't want to pursue that art form anymore because it was too much too soon. I think, and the dance department is also really interesting because in the drama school, high school, you don't take classes with the college students, but in dance you do.
Right.
Especially dance, like 11 and 12, you're taking classes and you're performing with the high school kids all the time, the college kids all the time. So you are around them. Like, while you might not be allowed to go to their dorms and or whatever, like, you are around them, you're participating in the conversation.
Building relationships, maybe falling in love with them on accident.
Exactly. You know, so you're definitely getting a little bit of that, like, too soon.
Right.
That you don't usually get, like, outside of a conservatory with that, like, experience.
And specifically a conservatory that has high school and college on the same campus, which is a rare thing that does not exist in very many places either. Even more rare than all the other stuff we already talked about.
Exactly, yeah. Because, like, yeah, we can't go to their dorms, but we can still hang out at the Elephants together. We can still hang out on the Hill together and the gym and everything else on campus and have meals together. So it's like, pretty much like living together, you know, like,
and that's
just
the list of places you're allowed to be, not the list of places you're not allowed to be, that you're still gonna fucking go
anywhere,
XYZ, blah blah blah.
Exactly.
I mean, and that's a thing too that I want to just point out as well. If anyone's kind of hearing this and starting to cast some judgment, that shit is at every high school regardless. It just gets more inappropriate when the half the people we're talking about right now are technically adults, even though the age gap between you is like a year, 18 months, 2 years, whatever, the same it would be between a sophomore and a senior, but you're a senior and they're a freshman in college. It's like, that's actually a smaller gap, but it's a bigger problem because one of those people's 18 years old. That does make a difference. Actually, not in the state of North Carolina, but in most places, that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And it should make a difference, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I was in high school with a bunch of other only high schoolers, and we were all looking for places to make out, or, you know, some people, I didn't smoke cigarettes, but other people were looking for places to do that. Hit a joint, whatever their thing was. That's happening. That's happening in high school.
The difference
There's only
is that,
so much
like,
you can do.
In UNCSA, you're going to people's, like, practice room or the dance, the closet in the dance studio or
the
library.
Room.
You know, like, all these different things. And in normal high school, you're just going to someone's house and party or behind the mall or whatever.
It's usually,
you know,
off campus if you're smart, right?
Yeah.
But there is nowhere.
I think it's also really interesting, too, because something special about UNCSA that bridges that gap is the fact that so many of us do high school and then college. So it's like, a year ago, when I was a senior in high school, I'm hanging out with the sophomores and the freshmen, and I'm friends with all these people. And then I stay in the same school. I'm still friends with these people. Like, they're still there.
You're just in 13th grade.
Exactly. You know? So if I feel like if there wasn't that bridge between, like, people going from the high school department to the college department, maybe the separation would exist a little bit more. But it's like, when I come in the freshman in college, I don't really know anyone else in my freshman class besides the people that went to high school with me that did the same thing. And we also know all the high schoolers because we were just with them last year.
Yeah, the people who were seniors in drama or music, you're all now those who made it through or at the thing.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Sophia, because I think I get the vibe, but I really want to double check with you.
Sure.
It seems like you're cool with that, or you were cool with that when it was there as far as how that dynamic worked out. You didn't feel like it was, you were not safe or you were in jeopardy or there was a danger of it. It just, it had a blurrier line than it would somewhere else. But it, from your personal experience, which is all I would ever ask you to speak from,
sure,
didn't seem to cause any problems for you.
It didn't. And I think maybe it has to do with how I was telling you, in my high school in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
this high school was so small that we were hanging out with the older kids from the beginning.
You had already done that.
I had already done that. You know, like from like ninth grade, we were hanging out with the seniors and going out and celebrating their birthdays and having those experiences, you know. So I was used to interacting with older people. And also in my dance school, like the school that I told you about that I auditioned for, when you're young age, like everyone in your class is about the same age, but the last right. 3 years they call it the pre-professional.
Okay.
And you start having people who you can do those 3 years by themselves without going all the like going to 8th grade to 8 years old. So when I started doing those years, which was freshman year of high school, sophomore year and junior year, you're getting people who are like 20 years old in a class with you, like
right.
who are adults. So I was already used to like, here I am in 9th grade and still in high school. And these people were like working and moved from a different state to be here and
yeah.
do this and all of that. So I feel like it's something I've kind of grew up interacting with.
That happens in theater a lot too, I feel like. And that's why the drama school, I think, is maybe one of the most parallel to try to compare these experiences that we talked to, because they do have that high school program. But they also, I can't really speak to how much music is like this. It's hard for me to know, because I know obviously you would have older instructors and stuff. But in drama, when you work on productions, when you're younger, you work with adults. Because there's like, you're not, if you're doing drama seriously, when you're younger, and there's some people who are exceptions to this who went to the drama school, so I'm not talking about everyone. Some people just did high school theater, and that's all they ever did, and they only ever did plays with other kids their age, and then they went to NCSA. But a lot of us did community theater, regional mm-hmm. theater shows. Some people were on fucking Broadway, in tours, all sorts of stuff. And in that case, you're playing the kid in the show about adult people. And
yeah.
so you're very used to being in a professional, emotional, vulnerable place doing the work with adults.
Mm-hmm.
And that line gets smaller and smaller as you get older. They stay adults and you slowly, slowly get to being one. And I think it's just a fascinating kind of dynamic that so many other things don't, so many other, not even to say art forms, but professions or career paths or things at school, it just doesn't work the same way. It seems to be very specific to artistry and these performances where there's only so many dancers, there's only so many theater mm-hmm. people, there's only so many companies for them to do the thing at. These numbers add up to we all got to kind of be together maybe before we're supposed to be hanging out or whatever the fuck. But
yeah,
it's a complicated, nuanced thing, I think. It seems like that's been your experience.
It has been. And I think especially like this comparison between drama and dance, when you start being good at a young age, for you to keep growing and pushing, you keep going to the next level and the next level and the next level. So therefore, you keep just interacting with even more people that are older than you, like each time you go up, you know?
Right.
So you're doing that also to, like, you're hungry for more, so you want to be doing that, and you want to keep pushing, so you're changing this your environment so that you can keep growing.
Right.
My dad also always said, sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
My dad always said like that it's better to be a small fish in a big tank than the big fish in a small tank.
That's
so
right.
So I feel like that also, you know, so once you've like outgrown your tank, you kind of have to go to the next level and be the big fish again to keep growing. So
I think that that's true until you reach a certain age, because I already know in my head that there will come a time when I'm like, nah, I like being big in this tank. I'm good. I don't need to, I'm not starting over. I'm the boss here and all you little fish. This is what we're going to do. You know why? Because you're little and I'm big and I'm old and you're young. Shut the fuck up. Like, I'm far away from it, everyone. Hear me say it. I know I'm far away from it. I'm talking about 60-year-old Rob. But, like, if I make it that far, that's going to be the attitude. It's not going to be like, you have more to learn. And that's why I respect old people who are like, no, I'm not changing or doing anything different. I'm tired. Like,
yeah,
I bet you are.
I've done a lot of that, and now this is the way. This is it. Like,
I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I respect it. You know, you made it that far. Well, then let's cover this, because I think it's definitely interesting that the timeline is a little shorter than some of the other people I talked to, because you graduated kind of more recently. But what's it been for you since you got out of school? Weird ass time to graduate.
It's very weird. It's actually, I graduated a year before pandemic, and had I gone to a different college, I would have graduated during the pandemic, because I didn't say college in 3 years. Because of that whole thing.
The way it's condensed.
Yeah. So it was a very like, oh shit, like I knew I was making the right choice, but now I really know I made the right choice kind of thing.
Yeah.
But graduating has been, it's been good. It's been really nice. I would say I graduated college and moved to New York soon after to do the Keenan Fellowship at Lincoln Center.
Oh, congrats. That's cool.
Thanks. Yeah, it was really nice. I loved
it.
How
much of that did you get to do the whole thing before?
I got to do the whole thing. Yes.
Great.
It was like 2 months after we finished, pandemic happened. So
yeah,
that
I was
going
to say, if I remember correctly, that works out to.
Yeah. So,
very good. What did you do for that? Like, what kind of work were you doing with Keenan?
It's you're a fellow in their education department.
Right.
So there's like a lot of different like areas to it, but it's you're learning their methodology of teaching, and you're teaching public schools with your mentor. And then you're also producing your own show. Like you have to write a pitch and they have to approve it, but you're like rehearsing and producing your own show. And you're doing some like admin work to support their programs, you know? So they have over the summer, they call it boot camp, which is a partnership they do with the DOE here, Department of Education here in New York City, where they, for kids to audition for Performing Arts High School, they get like a summer boot camp on art forms, and they get to really intense dance classes and music classes and drama classes, focused more for children in the lower income communities in the city who have not had that, you know, growing up, who didn't go to performing arts middle school or didn't have that experience, to get them to
that's
the level.
What I love about, I will say that, and I went to high school in New York City for 1 year, but I had to go through the process of finding my high school when I moved to New York. And obviously there's PS 180, whatever the fuck, like there's all the public schools, but the way that city tries to take care of its kids is better than any city I've ever lived in, as far as it being super concentrated. There's great cities with great programs and money and stuff like that, that I've never been to. I'm not talking shit. I'm just saying, when I moved to New York, it felt like
there were,
this is a terrible comparison, but it almost felt like a Harry Potter sorting hat thing, where it was like, where do you want to go, kid? And I was like, what do you mean? Isn't it based on where I fucking live and I go to that one? And they're like,
yeah,
or we have all this other stuff. And then after school, there's all this other stuff that we have funded, that even if you don't have money, which we know you don't, you live in Hell's Kitchen, it's, we're good. We got you. Like we'll figure it out. And that was just like, man, I didn't grow up around stuff like that. And that is the kind of shit that makes New York City like very inspiring. Cause you're like, fuck, I could do it. Like it feels
real.
At a young age.
It's so true. It's like they really care about making different things accessible for kids, you know?
Is that part of why you want to be there? Is it feels like it embraces your career, or is it just the community?
I always loved New York City, and I also think it's a big city vibe, the same way that the city I grew up in. So I really like the lots of things to do all the time and all of that. But I think, like in arts way, like in my art life in general, like I'm allowed to do so many different things here, you know, and have the space, that community to do so many different things.
Do you see yourself going back to Brazil at any point permanently?
Not like I'm making a plan to go back at any point, but being the older daughter of my dad, and while I do have an older sister in my most of the family, she has a hearing disability, and my mom's grandparents passed away, and we have uncles with mental illness, so I feel like I know there's... that at some point I will want to be back to be able
family
to support
gravity.
And support. Yeah. But I mean, like, ideally, I get to a point in my career where I can be like in Brazil for 6 months in like a different city where I'm making my career in 6 months, you know, and I'm just kind of like working remote while I'm there and like something to that sort. But
how has your opinion about your career and what you want to spend your time doing and making money doing, how's that changed since you left school? Has it?
It definitely has. It's been kind of like forced to change.
Yeah. So
pandemic, right?
Yeah.
All of that. But also as an immigrant, right? When you graduate, you have a student visa. So if you want to stay in the country, you have to do something about that. So as a student graduating from a program in this in the United States, you can apply for something called OPT. And I'm not sure how familiar you are, so cut me off at any point if you are.
I'm only familiar with the K-1 visa. That's the only one I know about.
Yeah, so no. So basically...
I was going to say, how are you solving the problem? Tinder, Bumble, there's a lot of ways.
There's a lot of ways, yeah. No, so when you graduate, when you're graduating a certificate program or like a diploma, you can apply for this thing called OPT, which is optional practice training. You have to apply. It's not like given to you, but it's basically the government understanding that for you to fully complete your degree, you have to have experience in your art, like in your area. So we'll extend your student visa for 1 year for you to have an optional practice and training, basically. And work, and you're allowed to work under that student visa as long as it relates to what you studied in that diploma degree. So there's some parameters which are you have to state within your major or something related to it. You have to declare to the government what you're doing and how it relates to your major. You have to be working at least 20 hours a week. And you can only be unemployed or like not working for either 60 or 90 days of the entire year non-consecutively.
That sounds like a pretty good deal. It's like as long as you're working part-time, close to what you said you were going to do, then you're cool.
Exactly.
That's a deal.
And it's like much cheaper than applying for like a full visa. So I always tell people like, do it. Like it's like $200, $500. It's still a lot of money, but like to give you a whole other year of being in the country, I feel like it's relatively
cheap. That's a great stay. And it also is like, of course, there's this magical world, kind of like when you get into the unions where like someone really likes you and they really want you to be here. And they're like, we'll pay for your visa thing as long as you'll work here. And why not find a cheap way to keep rolling the dice on that for a little while?
Yeah.
That's been my attitude about my own student loans and paying them back, which is like, I could have spent the first bit of me getting out of school being broke and having no fucking idea what I was going to do, being even more broke, desperate and sad. Or I could just let it build up a little bit more for a little while until making those payments doesn't hit me so fucking hard.
Yeah,
or
totally.
Someone's like, I love your script, Rob. Here's all this. Yeah, and I'll fucking be like, ah, there, fucking knock it out. Like, or slash it, whatever I can do.
Yeah.
And now that's exactly what I'm doing as the thing's coming around. And I tell people all the time, like, it's tough because you don't want to avoid responsibility, or you don't want to feel like you're hacking the system. Like if you're an ethical person, you don't love that. But the truth is like the big systems, especially immigration, man, and student loans too, because I went through a lot of this being in different places, states, different FAFSA. I went to part of my school under 24 years old, part of my school over. That makes a big difference. People don't know a bunch of details of that that a lot of people don't realize if they didn't go through it. Those systems are not designed for individual people. They're not designed for outliers of the system. And they take a spreadsheet and they look at the dots on it and they design it for these people. And all these people are not accounted for in the way that the rules work. One of the things that I've always said, and I think this is probably something that happens in immigration a lot too, it's just you fall through the cracks because you have this weird specific story. Like, I left home with the point of going to NCSA, and I told my family, some of which could help me out and others couldn't, and I told everybody I was going. The people who couldn't help me out were like, good luck, wish I could help you out. People who could help me out were like, I don't really think this is a great idea, so you're on your own. Their prerogative. So that's okay, but when I went to the government, I was like, I need money to go to college. I'm very good at this thing. I would like to go to the school I got into that's like doesn't accept everybody. And it's like, I think that's part of what I proved That should be enough. Like, listen, I got into this place. It's hard to do. Yeah. You should see me as qualified. I think that makes sense for everybody who gets into like prestigious places with low student count. And so if that's the case, I've already proved to you that I'm valuable. I'm not going to like bail, quit, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the government was like, okay, cool. How much money did your parents make last year? And I'm like, what difference does that make?
Doesn't matter.
They both told me to go fuck myself. So I don't understand why I need to tell you that.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we just have to know. And I'm like, okay, well, here's the one who doesn't have any money. And they're like, oh, well, but you have two parents, right? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, are they both remarried at the time? I'm like, yeah. They're like, well, then we need their combined household income and their combined household income.
Fuck.
That's how much money your parents have. So you get nothing, basically, because that's four people's income who should be helping yeah. you go to college. And I'm like, but they all say, go fuck myself, right? Or they don't have the money. And they're like, yeah, that's not part of our system. So sorry. There's no way to pre-qualify as an independent adult before the age of 24 for student loans in America. It's a big part of why a lot of people have debt, because they yeah. saw us as entitled to money that we didn't have. And so they refused to help us out. And I see stuff like this in the immigration process only because now I work on a TV show that deals with it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You get no information. They don't tell you, like, why is it 18 months? Why did this person get 9 months? Why did this person get 3 years and we still haven't gotten approval? What's going on? Like, they tell you nothing. And you don't yeah. get to know why. You just get to know that, sorry. So I say, do what you did and do and advocate for. Just keep going. Just
keep going.
Try to keep
exactly.
figuring it out.
And it's like, it's an easier pathway to allowing you to work here for a year, because if you don't do that and you leave the country and you go back to your country or somewhere else, then you, when you want to come back to the United States and work, you have to apply for another visa, who's going to be a much harder process to do so and also more expensive. Mm-hmm. So like I did that and it was great, but it did like, it kind of, because there's the requirements of like how much you can work and how many hours you need to be working and what you need to be working with, it kind of shuts down that freelance life. You know, like I can't really just like be in the city and go be a nanny or bartend like a lot of my friends did and just be doing auditions, because that doesn't really qualify for the requirements that I need to meet for the government. So that's why the fellowship was so enticing to me when I was leaving school, because like this is 6 months of work completely related to my major, paid full time. I will get to be in the city that I want to be in. I'll get to learn a bunch and I'll get to work in the things that I want to be working with.
Win-win-win.
But exactly. But that kind of steered the wheel of like, do I want to be performing full time? Do I want to be more like in the other side of the arts?
Educational,
you know? So, like,
administration. Yeah,
exactly. And in the end of the day, like it was nice because when pandemic hit, a lot of like my friends and myself included who were performing for smaller companies or teaching and other things, like a lot of that got shut down. And I had just started like an admin job for a nonprofit here in the city in the arts. So I was able to like maintain work through the pandemic, but that is really hard. So that kind of like forced me into changing a little bit. I'm really happy with what I'm doing right now. I am an arts administrator in the arts, in the dance department. I work for a nonprofit up in Harlem who brings dance for public schools for free for 46 different public schools in New York City.
Oh, and yeah. See, that's just the shit I was talking about.
Exactly. That,
and you're
I
making it
really,
happen.
Yeah.
I love
so,
it.
I work, the organization has been around for 46, 47 years, and we have a methodology of teaching and a way to approach teaching. So I run their teacher training programs. And then I also work as a general manager for a dance company called Helen Semino Dance, and she's an alum of UNCSA as well. So I get to have both hats of like an education yeah. area and like the professional world, and then perform and do projects as I see fit, you know, and all of that. But
that
it's hard.
Like you gotta
it's definitely
figure it
hard.
Out though, honestly.
Trying, right? Like there's always the thing of like, do I want to be taking more classes? Do I want to be dancing more? Like,
but that's just your inner drive. That's not like,
yeah,
that shouldn't hit you as critical. It should hit you as like just what's next, because you're not ever going to rest on your laurels and be like, cool, let me stay this big fish in the small pond. You're not going to fucking do that. You're going to do what your dad said, and you're going to be like, great, but what could,
what else?
And there's nothing wrong with that, girl. That's what got you here and is what gonna, like, that's what kind of makes us who we are, all the people on the show. And it doesn't last for everybody, and I don't criticize anyone who stops thinking like that at all.
Yeah.
But there is something that gets you to that school, and it, for a lot of people, it kind of just carries on through life, which is like, sometimes it manifests as like impatience with yourself, being critical with yourself, you know, being impatient. Man, does it manifest with that. But truthfully, what it is just your desire to evolve and improve and get better and do more. And like, that's great. That's not a negative quality, man.
No,
that's
no,
like
not at all.
How we move forward as human beings. So it's good that you feel that way.
Yeah. And it is, you know, we were talking about moving back to Brazil and future and careers and all of that. And I'm still here on a visa, obviously. Like, I didn't become a citizen. And
you should
visa...
be covered by DACA, in my opinion. You were, no, I'm serious. You, I think if you come here like under 16 years old.
16 years old, yeah.
For real, I think 16 and under. You come here, you keep crushing, and you don't fuck anything up, and you're good at something. I think good enough. That's
good,
my
opinion. That's all you need.
I'm not saying your family gets in automatically. We got to bring all these uncles and all your dad's wives
that's
and
too
stuff.
Much.
They may have to chill Rio, wherever. But you.
Yeah.
I don't even see it. That's just my opinion. I just don't see why you should even have to argue for it. Because there's people who come here. Of course, there's people who come here nefariously. That's like a really small group, actually. But there's a lot of people who come here, but they struggle. They have a tough time, and it may not be their fault, or they may make mistakes, whatever. But then there's people who come here young as shit. They're immersed in the culture. Your English is impeccable. Yeah, everything is like, and you've got a real talent that you've not only proved by getting accepted into a tough institution, but doing that shit twice. And now you continue. And then immediately after graduation, you're awarded this fellowship thing that not everybody gets. You on paper, you did it, girl. You showed everybody you know what the fuck you're doing, what you're talking about. You have value. So why do you have to continue to beg them to let you just keep doing that when we got so many naturalized citizens who don't do fucking nothing?
Nothing.
All day. So I'm like, she ain't taking a job from them. So,
it's really crazy because, you know,
that's
all
just
these
my
things
I have
said,
kind of a liberal opinion about it. I do.
Do you? I couldn't tell. Really?
I kind of do. I'm pro arts.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Well, I just don't think we can't have enough artists in this country ever. I just believe that that's the thing. They're always trying to squish us out and defund us and make it harder to do what we do.
Yeah.
They always try to convince us that the thing we do, like you said, is illegitimate or it's just like a hobby, whatever. Yet everybody goes home every night and every weekend and they watch our shit at binge level. And then they tell us that we're not worth the money or the time. And I just think it's bullshit. And I think we're only stronger when we get more immigrants, more people of color, more women, more like, why would you say no to a woman of color from Brazil who wants to come here to be an artist? That's an easy check. To me, that's like doctor, lawyer. It's like, even if you want to do meritocracy, there you go. There's your merit. What are we talking about?
Yeah. Well,
I'm not kissing
it's like,
ass. It's how I feel for real.
No, but it's really interesting because it, in a way, it's a little bit of the visa process. Like there's a visa for artists called O-1B, which is visa for people with extraordinary abilities, which sounds really fucking crazy. That
it makes you sound like a superhero.
Exactly. It's like,
am I an X-Men?
Exactly. You know, and then like people are just like, oh, that must be really hard. It's like, yeah, it's hard. And like, you have to do work.
But it does describe what you've been doing since you were 3 years old.
And you have to prove, is what you said, like, it's a annoying process and sometimes unfair process, but it does exactly what you were saying. Like, it's like, I have to prove that I'm good at what I'm doing and that I'm like getting work done and I'm like that I should be here, you know, which is great. Like, it is a lot of work. Like, it is a lot of money as well as like people right out of college paying for a lawyer to like apply for this visa to be able to stay here for years. But it is really fascinating. Like, I just reapplied this year, like this spring. And it's a really interesting process of looking back on all the shit you've done. Like, or when I like did it was during the pandemic and I included everything from my entire life. And this time I was only had to add the stuff that I've done in the past 3 years since I had the visa. And like, over 2,000 pages of work that I've done, you know? And it's a way, like, yeah, it's like annoying to have to be like collect everything and put everything in, but it's also like a moment of pride almost, like,
right,
like here I am against all odds and like look at how much great things I've done, you know? And
right,
vary from like working with really big names to working with smaller names or like
kids,
doing small work, exactly, like
right all over the place,
all over the like big perimeter of like arts and what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But what's hard is, what is unfair about it is that if you don't have that, right, if you haven't gotten the in and if you haven't gotten the work and all of that, then like how do you prove that you're extraordinary and that you're doing
right
shit that matters, you know?
Right. But that is the game of being extraordinary. It's not just being in that. I've talked to people about that at length, about, I think one of the easiest art forms to see that in, you can just go see it firsthand, is stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about it only because I've done it, but because you will go, I have seen some of the funniest stand-up comics I've ever seen in my life at like an open mic, and I mean, they don't get booked, they don't have some big career, they don't make it, whatever, and they're just crushing, like,
yeah,
better, like up there with people that I've seen for 30 years, and they just
mm-hmm
get it, and they're so good. But becoming extraordinary at something in a craft versus proving that to other people and then getting notoriety or recognition or a visa or money or whatever it is you're looking to get from it, that is a separate thing that you must also
yeah
learn how to do. And that's part of being an extraordinary comedian or dancer or actor,
mm-hmm,
is getting great at the thing, but also convincing the world that you're great at it, which inherently kind of sucks.
Ooh.
Because you're like, I want to be humble about my art. I just want
yes
to put it out there and let it speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that you're what entitled to do that, but you shouldn't expect it to go anywhere if you're not
anywhere
gonna tell anybody about it.
Yeah, which is, I feel like, something that we often find in this crossroad, you know, just
right,
like we're always like in school and learning, you're like, you're never good enough. Like you're always learning, you're always doing more. So like, you know that like there's so much more for you to learn. But
yeah
then when you go out there for you to be able to get the things and get the visas and get the money and get the audition, you have to kind of like talk yourself up like to the public and to everything else. And you're not faking it. It just sounds weird doing it, you know? Like
right
you have to like really put yourself like out there as this incredible person and like extraordinary artist. And you're like, yeah, but I'm no better than the people around me. But you have to make it sound like you are so that people care.
Well, then if that's what you think, then why are you arguing? If you think you're no better than everyone around you, then great, stay with them.
Yeah.
We're not going to pick you out of the group because we're looking for the person who's better than all those people. So if it's not you,
yeah,
fine, great. But if it is you and you just don't want to say it, maybe think about that, because you might be throwing
yeah
something out the door because you don't want to agree with everybody else that you're great. You're
mm-hmm
great. Let it be great. It's okay. Like,
it's
and
okay
I think
to like assume that.
It's okay to assume it. And here's what I say. And I think this is why I pointed those things out for you. You got accepted twice, Keenan Fellowship, whatever. Never seen you dance. I don't know anything about how good of a dancer you are. I've no concept of that whatsoever. I can look at what is basically a resume and
mm-hmm
see like, well, shit, she pulled that off somehow. That's
yeah
something. And I think that being aware of your objective accomplishments is where you start on that journey of feeling uncomfortable and trying to talk about what you've done or who you are or how you're great. I do that all the time. I don't like it because from every time I was a little kid, my parents were like, you might be the coolest kid who's ever lived. And I was like, awesome. And then I got out into the world and I was like, apparently I'm like one of the coolest people. And they were like, what?
No.
We don't like you. And I was like, okay, sorry. I was told by my mom and I'm super awesome. So I have battled with that my whole life between try to have self-esteem and try not to be an arrogant piece of shit. And
yeah
that's my cross to bear. That's the thing I'm going to do for the rest of my life. So believe me, I wish like you that we could just not. I just want to make good things and people can feel however they want about it. But if I'm going to get anything done, if I'm going to get anyone's attention, if any of the stuff that I make is going to be seen, I have to tell people who I am. And I think telling everybody I'm a nice guy is a waste of everybody's time. Telling someone I'm kind, compassionate, whatever quality is subjective that I think about myself, sharing that and getting on a pedestal or soapbox and being like, I'm fucking so respectful and kind or whatever, I'm a good guy, that's a waste of time. Just be a good guy and hope everyone figures it out. That you can treat like the art thing. Just do it and let people figure out that that's the case. But when it comes to your abilities as a worker, as an artist, as a contributor to whatever you're doing, just tell the truth. I went to routinely one of the highest ranked drama schools in the world. I'm not trying to fucking blow smoke. It's the Hollywood Reporter said it, not me.
Yeah.
I'm not being an asshole. And maybe you don't give a fuck about that. That's okay. But that's one of the things that I managed to pull off, because I went to a shitty public high school in Texas, three of them, and nobody fucking thought I could do anything because I got bad grades. I still got into that fucking school. I worked at Comedy Central 2 minutes after I got out of school. Like, you have to say stuff like that because you did accomplish it. You did.
Yeah. It's very true. It's true.
It's hard, and I think, though.
Something that, like, you know, like, we can all get better at, you know, and about doing it without feeling guilty of doing it. Because without other people around you feeling like you're just talking like yourself up and whatever. It's like, no, like, these things matter. Like, I worked really hard, you know, I worked really hard to get to these things, right? Like, I'm in this country living here and working here, but I had to do a shit more tons of stuff to be here than like all of the other people that left college with me who are not immigrants, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have to pay for a lawyer first year out of college, you know, with no help. Like, all these things are like, they matter, and they show how much of you you're putting in your work and how much you care and how much you're like fighting to make it and make it happen for yourself. And I think it's like no longer the time in the arts where there's only a few people doing it, but you can get work by just being good, you know, and then you're going to consistently be getting work because you're just good. And that's not like there's an oversaturation of artists, which is great and I love it. But does that mean that the opportunities are fewer for the group and you have to keep making sure you're standing out? And that means talking about your work proudly without feeling ashamed.
And I think that's the key, right? It's stick to objectivity, not subjectivity. Don't say everything I've ever made is great. Say I've made a shitload of things. Other people liked them, whatever.
Yep.
Factually, numbers.
Okay.
Start with that. You can steer clear of the subjective shit because that'll keep you from sounding like an asshole, I think. Might not keep you, but it'll help.
It will help.
And then the other thing I think that is key that you just kind of hit on, it's about context of when you bring that shit up.
Yeah.
Why? Like, mostly it's not appropriate in a casual conversation to go on about the things that you're good at or have done. If you're in a fucking job interview or some audition or some place where what you're doing is showing people what you are and who you know, that's when you got to just be cool about it. And people are like, oh yeah, how was that? And you'd be like, I don't know. Like, it was great. We could have done this better, but overall, I thought I knocked it out of the fucking park. If that's true, fucking say it. If it's not, maybe say it. You might get this job and then do a good job and then you can forget about that old shitty thing. And then you can talk about how this was great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed talking to you, Sophia. This is really fun. And
it's been really great. I
appreciate your perspective on this a lot because, you know, we're not the same age. We didn't go to school at the same time. And I haven't talked to as many people who have kind of come out right as this whole, you know, world fell apart and try to navigate that. And it really sounds like there's a solid foundation before you went out into the world and like started going to high school and other countries and then graduate and the pandemic, all this kind of crazy shit that happened to you, visas. You try to figure all that out. But before that, it really just seemed like there's a pretty solid group of people who have a lot of maturity and kindness and belief in you and support, which is so cool to hear. Because that's just not, you know, and I know you don't take it for granted, but it's just not everybody's story. A lot of people.
It really isn't.
Work hard to be who they are in spite of the people that they were born around. So that's super cool. And it seems like it's serving you well. You seem like a happy person. Am I reading that right?
You are reading that right. I am happy. I mean, you know, it's like you can't. I'm fortunate to be where I am right now and where I am today and have accomplished the things that I have. So I need to be happy about it. You know, like I'm happy to be in this country and I'm happy to be working and doing things that I love. And it's nothing to be taken for granted either. So
absolutely. Well, I appreciate it and we'll have you on the next one.
Thank you.
Thank you.